Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I've never been this nervous in my life.
Greetings from Long Time No See, the podcast. Every week, we'll be inviting two blindfolded comedians to answer a series of questions about their careers, lives, and opinions. Now, let's remove those blindfolds and start the show.
Hi!
What would your opening line with your celebrity crush be?
Loved you in Harry Potter.
Worst date you've been on?
A man bit my neck mole off once.
You did what?
A man bit my neck mole off.
Oh my God, Jack almost fell off his chair.
Be sure to follow and subscribe to the podcast.
Consequence Podcast Network. Hello, and welcome to the Spark Parade, where I geek out with artists and entertainers about their cultural spark of inspiration. I'm Adam Unz, at Spark Parade, on all social media. Thanks ever so much for joining me. My guest today is Ghosts actor Asher Grodman, who spoke to me about his spark, the incredible Al Pacino starring Sidney Lumet directed classic Dog Day Afternoon. So, I love this movie so much, and it was really fun talking to Asher about how much we both love it. We also talked about acting and the joy of performance, and we did it in a way that won't make non-actors want to puke, which is quite an achievement in and of itself, I think. But seriously, such a great conversation. So let's get to it. Quick Asher facts. Asher Grodman is an actor, director, writer, and producer who has worked across all mediums. He holds an MFA in acting from the American Conservatory Theater in San Francisco and a BA in film and English from Columbia University. Asher can currently be seen starring as fan favorite character Trevor on the critically acclaimed CBS comedy Ghosts. His other recent television work includes Succession, Chicago Med, and Law and Order SVU. In addition to his work in front of and behind the camera, he currently teaches acting for both theater and film at Hunter College, as well as instructing inmates in acting at Rikers Island. Ghosts is currently on its second season and has been renewed for a third. You can catch Asher in it Thursdays on CBS. Quick Dog Day Afternoon facts. Dog Day Afternoon is a 1975 film directed by Sidney Lumet and starring Al Pacino, John Cazale, James Broderick, Charles Durning, and Chris Sarandon. The screenplay is based on the Life magazine article The Boys in the Bank, which chronicled a 1972 robbery and hostage situation at a Chase Manhattan branch in Brooklyn. The film's plot centers around inexperienced criminal Sonny Wortzik, played by Al Pacino, who leads a bank robbery in Brooklyn. Things quickly go wrong and a hostage situation develops, as Sonny and his accomplice Sal, played by John Cazale, try desperately to remain in control, a media circus develops, and the FBI arrives, creating even more tension. Gradually, Sonny's motivations behind the robbery are revealed, and his standoff with law enforcement moves towards its inevitable end. Quick note and spoiler here. The motivation at hand is that Sonny wants to pay for gender confirmation surgery for his trans partner. In our conversation, Asher and I talk a lot about a phone call scene, and that's a call between Al Pacino's character, who is in the bank, and his partner, played by Chris Sarandon, who is outside with the police. Just for context. Upon theatrical release, Dog Day Afternoon was a critical and box office success. It was nominated for 7 Golden Globe Awards and 6 Academy Awards, and won the Academy Award for Best Original Screenplay. In 2009, Dog Day Afternoon was deemed culturally, historically, or aesthetically significant by the Library of Congress and was selected for preservation in the National Film Registry. And there you have it. Let's dive into the main event. Here comes my chat with Asher Grodman about Dog Day Afternoon. I feel like I should add a little disclaimer with conversations that start this way, where sometimes I'll talk to people about things that are, you know, not to my liking, not about, you know, my personal taste doesn't align with theirs. Totally cool. I can live vicariously through whatever they're talking about. This is not one of those situations. I love this movie so much. I was so excited to have the chance to watch it again because I haven't seen it in so long. I will do my best to not make this entire conversation about me.
Oh, no, it's good. I'm glad that you just watched it because then there are things I had this recently where actually with a friend, Brandon, who's on the show with me. I pitched a movie that was seminal to me growing up to have a pitch. I told him the story of it. And then I went back and watched it and I realized, oh, this movie's still great, but I have completely misremembered this movie and like pitched it into something different in my head.
Mm-hmm.
So if there are details on Dog Day that I've gotten wrong, you can correct me.
Okay. You know, it's really just about your experience. So you're not being tested. But I guess I would rather have that experience of just being like, oh, this isn't quite where I remembered it, instead of like, oh my God, I don't like this movie anymore. Or, you know, it's really not aged well, whatever.
Uh-huh. This is, I think, aged very well.
Yes, definitely. So with these conversations, we always start out with your origin story with whatever we're talking about. So, this may be, I don't know when you watched this the first time, that may have been a long time ago, but do you remember seeing it for the first time or hearing about it, any of that stuff?
I actually don't remember when I was in college when I first saw it. I know that. And I was interning for Martin Bregman, who was the producer of it. And I'm pretty sure that I had seen it before I ever started doing that. I probably saw it for the first time in or around some class that I had at Columbia, maybe a survey through history or American cinema or something like that. I had a class with Andrew Saris, who was at Columbia for a long time, may still be there, who was famous for eviscerating Sidney Lumet. And then in front of my eyes, one day he was like, it was after Sidney had passed, he was like, you know, I think that I was a little hard and maybe mischaracterized or I had the wrong impression of Sidney Lumet's work. And I was like, fuck you, man. You spent your life like eviscerating this dude. So I know it was before that class because I remember resenting him for his views on Sidney Lumet, who I thought was incredible.
Yeah.
So I don't remember the first time. I remember how it made me feel. And it was just like this epic tale of part of what's so special about the movie for me is that Sonny has no reason to be anything special that anyone would ever know about. He's just a guy living in the kind of anonymity of the city. And on this one day, this one guy, this schmuck gets the attention of the entire world. And there's something about the anonymity to spotlight. And then in a way kind of, not maintaining the source of that anonymity, I think, in the midst of the spotlight. It wasn't that he was some like star waiting to happen that captured everyone. I think it was the fact that he was this just nothing dude who ended up doing this thing and captivated everyone.
Yeah.
I think there was something about the everymanness of him that is so engaging.
Right. And I think in that everymanness, in that, emerging from this anonymity, it's important that it isn't like having that happen in a small town in Nebraska. It's in New York.
Yeah.
And in this city is like, you know, being anonymous is very easy. I think New Yorkers can really ignore anybody else's crazy bullshit.
Yeah.
But in a situation like this, it wasn't just about something that struck me is that it's like a very small, very intimate story. It's like a moment in time in a very specific location that affects a lot of people. It becomes this bigger thing.
Yeah.
The action is really confined to a very, very small, very specific space.
Yeah.
But the issues that are dealt with and the repercussions of it are so much bigger. And there's so many other people who are involved and like dramatic political implications and societal implications that kind of reverberate through the crowd in the local area, but also through the media, through, you know, the country, if not the world.
It's funny that that there's that epic sequence that of the Attica sequence when he's out in front of the, and there's this funny dynamic that the film sets up really well visually, where it's like the middle of this crucible is sunny, the bank, a little bit of space, the police, the FBI is there. It keeps expanding. And then the group on the outside that is furthest away is the crowd of people watching at home. And somehow that crowd, because of the media, which is another layer in there, becomes the most potent and the most powerful, right? So it's even like this kind of weird precursor to the social media-ness of the world we live in today, where it's like, or, you know, the kind of like, he's popular.
Mm-hmm.
And so he has a kind of power. And he even said, there's a moment he says in the film, it's like, if these people weren't here, you'd shoot me dead.
Right.
And there is this kind of like, the spotlight has landed on this guy. And I think the thing about the anonymity that we talked about earlier that was unique is that, and why it resonates, why I see this anonymity as being a thing that's maintained through the film, is that Sonny doesn't want his personal life out there.
Mm-hmm.
Like this story, he never meant for any of this to happen.
Mm-hmm.
This plan did not work. And out in the, and this is the, I think the social media relevance is that he's fighting for survival and for his life in a sea of this like popularity in this world where popularity rules because that's what's keeping him alive.
Right.
Does that make sense? I'm doing a bad job of explaining this, but he is controlling things that he never should be able to control.
Mm-hmm. But I think it's also a good, another good parallel between this and social media is getting everyone on side, having all of these things happening where he's like saying, you know, the police can fuck off, that, you know, he gets the people in the bank on side. There's this, you know, a little Stockholm syndrome going on where people are just like kind of happy to be there hanging out. And as the day progresses, people get less and less stressed out about being there. But then when it becomes public knowledge that he has a trans partner and the crowd gets wind of that, it's this sudden split, which I think is another thing that is very similar to social media, that people can like love a person and then find out something about them that they disagree with and then just do a complete 180 and start shitting on them. And the fact that the crowd kind of splits and that new people come in and there's like gay rights activists who are supporting him and people who are, you know, screaming about how much they hate gay people and hate trans people and calling him a freak or whatever. And it just adds this extra dimension. I read something, somebody wrote about this and said they find it to be a really patriotic film and that to them, patriotism is about loving your country enough to recognize when things need to change and where its flaws are, and that it's like, I think it's a little bit of a labored comparison, but to me, it's a reflection of what this country is, that it's like there's division, there are things that we can all be unified over, and that it's things change in some respects, and in some respects, things don't change. Like, you know, a lot of these issues are still being debated. A lot of people, you know, trans people and gay people still have the same problems just existing in society. So, yeah, that was a bit of a rambling, all over the place thing.
No, I'm the king of rambling. So that was nothing. there's a great, I'm forgetting it now, but there's this moment, I think it's after before the phone call, which is just two of the greatest performances ever caught on film. When there's a moment where the crowd starts changing. You were referring to it earlier, where it's suddenly more gay rights activists, or at least the gay community is out there. And Sonny has a kind of response to it. Pacino has this response to it where it's, you can sense that he feels overexposed because he kind of, I forget, he's ushering someone in at the last second, throws up a little fist to the gay community there. But it's a little bit of like, he's navigating, how much of me do I want out here right now? And who am I? And just because I am a thing, does that mean I need to be identified by that? Like there are so many questions coming in, which I think in our world today with the social media aspect of it, everyone kind of having this label community thing that you identify with, there is this, how do I want to be seen question. And of course, for Sonny, it's even a deeper thing because he didn't want to be seen at all.
Right.
If this day goes well, no one knows his name.
Mm-hmm.
He has money and he's gone.
Right.
So it's this weird, like, I think it's this very human question or human. It's a very human response to attention and what attention means. And of course, what's so fascinating about the film is that the attention, which is often the thing we all like crave attention. At the same time, we're terrified of it. And this thing with that push-pull is also what's keeping him alive.
Right.
And so it's like this, and this is the kind of film where, and like, if anyone ever tried to remake this film or even came close to it, you'd be like, oh, you're ripping off Dog Day Afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it is such a unique story. I mean, it really happened,
yeah.
Which is a part of why it's so unique. I remember someone telling me, or a teacher telling me, there's like 9 stories out there. And everything else is just a play off of one of those 9 stories. And Dog Day Afternoon feels like the 10th for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, it's its own thing.
Yeah. And that stuff that you're saying about like not wanting to be thrust into the spotlight and then being thrust into the spotlight, not wanting every aspect of his life and his personal life exposed. To me, the nucleus of this story is a love story.
Yeah.
And it's really about going to extremes to help the people that you care about and that conversation that you're talking about.
And it's a messy love story. It's mm-hmm. not, the phone call does not lead you to believe they have a great relationship.
Right. Or that there's going to be an ongoing relationship after this event.
Or yeah, there's something about the film that it is embraces how messy life is. And actually, it's something you said earlier, I just wanted to jump back to this, but then just a little tangent. The Stockholm Syndrome thing you mentioned, it's funny. I'm not a psychologist. I don't really understand what the limits of that definition are, but it never struck me as the colloquial definition of Stockholm Syndrome, because on some level, it almost felt like the people in the bank relate more to Sonny than they do to the people outside the bank, right? These are just people clocking a day, just trying to survive, right? And there's some wonderful moments in there. I know a lot of that was kind of improvised and found, and Sidney Lumet like to rehearse. And there are a lot of things. They talk about wages, and they talk about neither Sonny or the people in the bank can deny the fact that they can relate to each other.
Mm-hmm.
You know, someone's diabetic, someone's got an issue, someone's making this much money, someone's doing, like, they can all see the humanity in each other. The people outside who have the uniform on and feel like they're somehow, they have a job, they're the cops, they have this role in society, that's who no one can seem to connect to.
Mm-hmm.
To each other, it's, I mean, when they're on TV, they see themselves on TV, it's this, everyone in the bank, including Sonny's, having the same response to, oh my God, that's, my face is on, I'm on television.
Right. Yeah.
Like there's no mask that's being worn among each other.
Yeah. And just that, you know, ability of people to recognize people who share a common experience or share their values or any of that stuff, or just being around other people and getting to know them. It's like that moment at the airport at the end when one of the hostages is like handing over a rosary to Sal and saying, you know, like, you're going to go on a plane for the first time. It's okay. You just don't worry, blah, blah, blah. It's like, this is somebody who's being held hostage by this man. And that it's just so human. And the sweetness of that moment. And also, I mean, outside of the story, the fucking acting in this film is just like, I don't know what to do with myself. Like when I'm acting, I know, you know, I can be really good. I can be terrible. I know the difference. I feel it. When I see performances like the ones in this movie, especially Pacino, I mean, John Cazale, everybody, it just makes me go, I am terrible. This is like, all of these people just like, I can aspire to that level of greatness, but I feel it in my bones. I know I could never achieve that. And the amount of, you know, I think part of it, the naturalism does come from, as you're saying, like having that improvisational stuff thrown in, which I think this is the only film that Sidney Lumet allowed improvisation, or at least on that scale.
Oh, it's very possible. I'm so glad that you actually chose this moment to switch into the acting, because I completely agree with you. I've spent time in my life as an acting teacher and many years of my life as a bad actor who had to figure out how to be a better actor. So those two things, teaching it and trying to figure it out yourself, hopefully have given me a little bit of perspective on this stuff. And something that I have found is that really good storytelling and really good acting is when the audience has to watch because they don't know what you're going to do next. And that's a level of spontaneity.
Mm.
And this film, I just think that Pacino and so many of his performances, but especially Pacino in this, is just electric.
Mm-hmm.
You can feel his thoughts as he's trying to grapple with one problem after another, after another. And so you're never seeing this put together thing. You're watching him figure it out as he's going.
Mm-hmm.
So you can watch it over and over again, and it still has this electricity because he's just kind of in this place, as we are in life, of not knowing what the next problem is or how to solve the problem in front of me. It's kind of amazing, despite all of the messiness, that he handles things as well as he does over the course of the film. But you never lose sight of the chaos that's happening.
Mm.
And I think as an actor, that's kind of your goal at any point, is that we have this disadvantage as actors when it comes to storytelling, that we know what's going to happen next. It's the structure. This is path. There's this great clip of Philip Seymour Hoffman talking about acting that I would always show my students, that my acting coach, Bob Krakauer, showed me. And he talks about, you know, this is a path that must be followed, but then how do you allow this chaos to happen? That is the thing that determines our life, because in life, we never know what's going to happen next.
Yeah.
And for me, this performance, beyond anything else that I ever saw Pacino do, had this kind of electricity to it.
Hmm.
It's captivating.
Time for a quick break, because somebody's got to keep the lights on around here, but we'll be right back.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
And, you know, whatever you think about method acting, whatever you think about any acting philosophy, I think the feeling for me is that to some extent, acting philosophies are like religion. It's you subscribe to a very specific idea of what you need to do to prepare to get you to where you need to be to play whatever character you're doing. And I don't give a fuck what anybody does as long as they're not affecting other people negatively.
Yeah, I would agree.
And with this, sometimes when there are method actors who I feel like the opposite of the intended effect comes through. Sometimes with Dustin Hoffman, I feel like he is like, look at how fucking good I am. Can you see what I'm doing right now? This is acting.
Uh-huh.
And with this movie, it's like just completely honest and open. And it's like unselfconscious, just being. And he just seems like this guy. He seems like he is in this situation. Part of it as well is just having an ensemble, people who come from the theater who are really comfortable with each other, you know. Al Pacino handpicked most of the actors, and there were people who he'd worked with in theater. So they already had this kind of easy rapport. I think that helps.
Yeah.
But just the skill and the sensitivity, mind blowing. Like, what can you say?
Yeah. Yeah. It's, you know, I've worked with people who are really acting teachers and some actors who I guess would define themselves or be defined, you know, as the kind of methody thing. And look, at the end of the day, I think the thing that happens between people is more interesting than the thing that you can plan.
Mm-hmm.
So what I think the danger of the methody stuff, in addition to, I personally think that I've personally seen people who ascribe to that, it can be a little bit damaging psychologically.
Mm.
Because I think there is this putting pain on a pedestal.
Mm-hmm.
A little bit. So that bothers me, but, you know, good work is good work. I think that you said it really well. It's that it's how do you create collaboration in the work. And if what you're doing is putting you off in a corner to do your own thing, I don't think it's the best way to approach something, especially because you want the work to be the sum of the people involved. And if it's the sum of the people involved and then you, I think there's a problem.
Right. And that, you know, not to just continually shit on Dustin Hoffman, but I mean, I'm going to do that anyway.
Okay.
Thinking about like Kramer versus Kramer, he like threw a glass at Meryl Streep's head. She had no idea it was going to happen. Like she could have gotten hurt.
What?
And it's this selfishness and this commitment to this idea that the only way to be a good actor is to fully live the experience of whatever you're trying to portray. And it's like, you know, the, again, Dustin Hoffman in Marathon Man, the old, you know, Laurence Olivier saying, try acting.
Uh-huh.
And that's it. It's like, it isn't, at the end of the day, it is not real, but you want to be able to convey something that is as close to real as possible. And to have that happen, I think you got to be able to trust the people you're working with. And if you prevent that trust from happening by making people feel unsteady, making them feel like you are going to make spontaneous choices that are not in the spirit of collaboration and making sure that everybody is able to do their best work, but in trying, you know, it's this self-aggrandizing version of what acting should be, that it's like, I am, the most important thing is me. And the most important thing is that I get the attention. I get people to notice the great work that I'm doing.
Yeah.
And fuck everybody else. And I guess bringing it back to the subject at hand, my impression from all of the stuff that I've read about the making of this movie is that there was none of that. And it was really just about all of these people coming together to make this, simple, complicated, wonderful piece of film that has really stood the test of time. It's still very, like, it feels very current. It's aged so well.
I was going to say, if there's some book somewhere talking about how all the method acting that was happening on the set of Dog Day Afternoon, both of us have egg on our face right now, but I don't think that exists. I will tell you, something that really frustrated me for a long time as someone who's just made every mistake that I think you can make as an actor and how to approach it. What you're taught by and large in acting school, I think loses sight of the lane that an actor is supposed to be in relation to the other people involved in the project. Like even just making a television show, which is a very technical thing. I don't need you to feel a certain thing. I need you to hit that mark and look over there and then pick up that thing and move it over. Like it's a very technical thing to tell these stories visually. And often what happens is the journey to find a sense of comfort in yourself or freedom or something like that can lead you to abandon everything around you, when in reality, to tell these stories, we need to be collaborating with everything around us. And so there's just a part of the puzzle that you are. It just so happens that it's your face up there at the end, so it looks like it's just all you, and then there's a new terror that comes up with that, but it's not. There's a team of hundreds of people who are working tirelessly, and how you come off is a result of their work as well. So are you collaborating on that process, or are you screwing everyone, including yourself, up? Does that make any sense?
Yeah. And I think, you know, the other thing that is special about this production is that Sidney Lumet was committed to trying to make everything as naturalistic as possible. So he wasn't using any extra lighting. It was the lighting in the bank.
Yeah.
And then, anything extra was just the same fluorescent lighting, using natural light outside and, like, you know, little tricks like having spotlights that were positioned in the same place that streetlights were, so it would seem like it was just enhanced streetlight. And then crowds of people, just people from South Slope wandering in and saying, what's going on? And becoming part of it and, like, you know, mixing in with the background people so that the feeling was real. It's that, like, kind of visceral crowd participation that just enhances everything so much. And that is a really vital part of it too, what you were just saying, that it can't just be you ignoring your surroundings and only focusing on yourself and your performance. The collaboration is not just with the other actors, but with the environment around you and being able to, you know, that's the beauty of film and TV is with theater, you can't really say, I am actually in this place. It's like very clearly there is an audience in front of you and you are not, you know, the set can't completely, you can't be confined in it. And, you know, film and TV, there's cameras, there's other people, but you get a much better feeling unless, you know, green screen, whatever, blah, blah, blah. You know what I mean? That it's like in this particular situation, they're in this bank, you know, that's something that had been dressed up to look like a bank. And they have this real crowd outside. They have the feeling of everything that had happened in this world and really taking advantage of that in the best way possible.
Yeah, it's funny. I think even in theater, there's actually a lot more freedom or space to kind of the in that balance of like structure, chaos, there's a lot more structure, I think, in film and television, or at least in television, because you're dealing with different lenses, different hitting a light, I know there's lights in theater, but the unit of measurement is smaller in television because we're controlling so much of what's going on, while in theater, because it's fundamentally this oral medium, your voice can take care of so much of it, and you don't have a camera in your face and you don't have, you know, four people running it and sound and lights and different props and everything that you're trying to get inside this frame. So there's all that to say, it's even more of that collaborative thing because there's so many different players in the situation. Yeah. But it's funny that I always go back to this film and these performances as like the North Star in terms of making something feel spontaneous and making something feel so easy. And you're right, there's this, I guess, natural, gritty, Sidney Lumet's work, especially his work in New York, and The Verdict too. God, The Verdict is an amazing movie. It has this very like quintessential like 70s feel to it, where it does feel like you're going back in time and accurately, like what would it be like to walk the city streets in those years? It's funny, that opening montage with the Elton John song is so interesting to me because you see so many people, and including people who are going to play a role in the film, but they are being presented to you, like his wife and their kids are in one of the shots outside the movie theater, and they're just presented to you as people. You have no idea that they're going to come in and play a pivotal role in this thing. It's just this kind of sea of New York on this hot day, on this slow news day in New York, where some schmuck decides to rob a bank.
Yeah.
And the chaos ensues.
Yeah.
But it's a very, like, it establishes that kind of everyman thing in this behemoth of a city where no one can control anything. And suddenly some guy is handed the reins to, you know, or at least the appearance of the reins for a day.
Yeah. It's like, again, very small and very big at the same time. And just brilliant. I love it.
Yeah. There's a story that, I don't know if this is true, but there's a story that when the phone call happened, there's a shot after the phone call where Sonny's got his head, down in his hands. Someone says something and he looks up like at this like moment of shock. And apparently, this is just a fun little tidbit, it has no connection to anything else we're talking about. Apparently that shot of him looking up like, oh, you gotta be kidding me, is, Sidney Lumet leaning in and saying, okay, great, Al, we're going to go one more time.
Yeah.
Which I just love that's in there. Yeah.
Yeah. With that conversation that he like made him do another take when he was like so exhausted, like, you know, just in his bones, ready to collapse. And he's like, oh my God, are you kidding me?
Yeah. It's also a great, like I, as someone who deals with a lot of anxiety in his life, it's a great like metaphor, this movie, for, I think, the inner workings of someone with anxiety or all the stresses of daily life, as this man tries to balance all of these insane things and tries to keep some semblance of control. Yeah, there's so much for me about this film that I think it's very rare to see a movie and be like, oh, I think that's my favorite movie of all time. I think if you ask people your favorite movie, like it's you're going to get like shit flat answers.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, from the moment I saw it, I was like, oh God, this thing works on so many different levels and it's so unique. And it's so leaves such this like palpable impact when you watch it that I've just never seen anything that rivals it. For me personally, I highly recommend it. It's really, really good. I don't know how it didn't get, I know it's in the Library of Congress and I know it's gotten accolades and stuff like that, but I don't know how it has not gone down, especially because I think it has aged so well and has been such a, I was watching Network with a friend from college recently, and I wrote my thesis on Dog Day Afternoon and he wrote his thesis on Network. And so we were going to trade movie nights. And I watched Network, and Network like predicts like the next 40 years of media, social media, Trumpism, all of this kind of world we live in. And Dog Day Afternoon is very similar. So with all of the way that it, how insightful it is, I'm surprised that it is not at the top of movie lists, left, right and center. Because I just feel like it's somehow, somehow it doesn't get the credit it deserves, I think.
Well, today, you and I think have done our small part to right that wrong. So
thank you. Good.
Yes.
I'm glad.
I think that is
honor to do so.
Yeah. I think that's a lovely place to stop. What fun. What a joy. Really. I cannot thank you enough for bringing me something that is so special to me. It really, these conversations are like, I love talking, like I said, I love talking to people about all different kinds of things, but when it's something that has really special meaning to me, it's really, really something. So thank you.
Well, I'm so glad. And thank you. This is such a cool thing that you guys do. Cause you know, I'm on the show and I love ghosts and I love the people I work with and all this stuff. And I could talk about it all day long, but it's also just fun to get on and talk about. If someone was like, hey, I just want to get coffee and talk with Dog Dash and in for an hour, I'd be like, oh my God, yes, let's go.
Yeah.
So it's just fun to be able to talk about something that I guess I just love the mission statement of this thing, you know, because it's like that North Star. What is the thing that gets your juices flowing? And this for me is, I love this movie. I just think it's so special. And it is that kind of thing where you talk to like film buffs, you talk to their favorite movies and then they'll be like, oh yeah, love that. And then if you talk film buff, you love Dog Day Afternoon, they're like,
yes,
that's mm-hmm. like, it's like a whole, it's like the secrets, the insider, the Dark Horse film or something, the insider film.
Yeah. But something that everybody, I mean, like, that's the thing that blows my mind. It's like, it was a huge hit. It was like everywhere. And it's the kind of movie where the subject matter is so complicated. There's so many different factors that could make it a very niche kind of culty film, but it was gigantic. And
And it's very brave for 19. I think they shot it in 75, it came out in 76. For what they deal with, Sonny's relationship, for what the messiness in the 70s, for what they're dealing with in this film. And I remember Marty Bregman telling me they had a test audience or something. And the phone calls, what they were really worried about. And they were like, are people going to start laughing at this? Because this is not the kind of thing that you normally see in a movie, especially in the 70s. I mean, it's something that we're barely seeing in movies now.
Mm.
And I remember him saying, we were like up at the projecting the film and like you could hear a pin drop. And he was like, the second I heard that, I was like, hey, this is going to work.
Yeah.
So for what it does, you know, 50 years ago, 50 years ago, almost, Jesus, 50 yeah. years ago, almost.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's just a miraculous film.
Yeah. Yeah. What my very last fun fact, I'm going to get this quote slightly wrong, I think, but the direction that Sidney Lumet gave to Chris Sarandon was, asking him to kind of pull back on being too over the top and too camp and said, less drag queen, more Queen's housewife.
Ah,
yeah.
I love that.
Yeah. Really nice.
I love that. I love it. That performance. Oh my God. It's so good. And mm-hmm. it's like, and why isn't that going down as one of the greatest performances? It's just, this movie's amazing.
Again, hopefully we are helping to spread the word here. Everybody listening to this, Right. Go watch it. Tell your friends.
Yeah. Do yourself a favor.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, man.
Thank you again. This has been so much fun. I really appreciate you making time for me.
Oh, I've had a blast.
All right. Take care. Wasn't that a great one? If you haven't seen Dog Day Afternoon, you really really should, if we didn't make that clear enough. It's fucking great. Thanks again to Asher for such a wonderful conversation. You can catch him in Ghosts on Thursday nights on CBS. Okay, quick spark of the week from me. I, like many, many other people, have been watching The Gentlemen on Netflix, and it is the perfect turn your brain off option for me right now. I can never quite tell what I'm going to get from Guy Ritchie, and he has made some fucking stinkers in the past, but this is him at his best. You know, don't get me wrong here. It is still really fucking stupid, but it's also very entertaining. So, you know, check it out if you want something that won't challenge you too much. Maybe you had a hard week and you just want to let some entertainment wash over you. If that's your situation, this is a very, very good option for you. And that's about it this time around. Please follow me on social media at Spark Parade. Please rate the show 5 stars and leave me a sweet and kind little review wherever you can. And until next time, bye.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy 2, get 2 free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.